This is Paul Giamatti speaking.
And this is Stephen Asma. And this episode of Chinwag is sponsored by BetterHelp.
It is indeed, Steve. Let me ask you a blunt question. Do you ever feel stuck, Steve? I'm serious. Do you ever feel kind of stuck in the mud?
Every day, my friend.
Yeah.
Every damn day.
And then what happens is you get overwhelmed because you're kind of stuck, right?
True.
As I get older, and I am getting older, folks, I may not look it. You may think, oh, he's like Dorian Gray.
He's going backwards.
Yeah, wow. He's going backwards. I am getting older, folks. It's hard to believe. The thing I notice is how important it is to maintain a balance. You know, I guess you'd call it work-life balance. I don't think I'm alone here, but therapy's helped me do this balance. It can help you find equilibrium. It can help you feel more empowered in the decisions you make, the boundaries and priorities you set. It's good in that way. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. And all you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Sometimes that's hard, right, to find the right person. So this helps. You can change. So learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/chinwag today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp. HELP.com/chinwag. Steve Asma.
Hello, Governor.
Hello. Welcome to the Chinwag. It is a Chinwag podcast. Welcome to the Chinwag podcast. It's a British it's a British phrase, isn't it, Chinwag?
Yes, it is. At least that's my understanding, is that the Brits use it historically. And I know some contemporary Brits who still say Chinwag.
Really?
But it needs to be better known. It means a conversation, a chat.
Yeah,
it does.
It's funny. I've always kind of known exactly. I've always kind of known of it, but I never knew it was like a particularly British thing. I thought it was just, you know. But I'm gonna, you know, next I'm with my chimney sweep pals,
we're all gonna. It does sound like that.
It does.
It's very Victorian sounding.
Yeah, it is. It's a good phrase. But anyway, welcome to the Chinwag. As indicated previously, I am Paul Giamatti.
And I am Stephen Asma, the co-host of the fine Chinwag, and we encourage you guys, as usual, to please head on down to Apple and rate us. Give us a good rating if you enjoy the show.
Yep.
And also, we're on YouTube and Instagram.
All over the place, and send questions, comments, conundrums, whatever you want. Just all of that. Let's put all that aside. All of the business and shopkeeping or whatever we call it, house cleaning. Because we have a great guest today, right?
Yes, one of the very best, one of the great actors of our generation.
One of the great actors of our generation. Absolutely. He is a Golden Globe, Grammy, and Tony Award-winning actor. He's a musician. He's a golfer. He's apparently a great poker player. He's a fantastic human being. He's been in all kinds of projects. Let me see. He was great. He got an Academy Award nomination for Hotel Rwanda, which he's great in.
Oh, an amazing film.
Amazing. He's terrific in everything. Boogie Nights, Ocean's 11, Crash. He's been on Black Monday, that series. He was House of Lies. He's the narrator of the rebooted Wonder Years, which I hadn't realized until recently that was even a thing. But it's back, and he's narrating. And I love him. One of my favorite things that he's in is Devil in a Blue Dress, which is, one of his first films.
Is that Walter Mosley's story?
And with Denzel Washington, and he's fantastic in that movie. And, of course, if you're a Marvel fan, you know that he will be reprising his role of Colonel James Rhodes, War Machine, the new spy series Secret Invasion, which is streaming now on Disney+.
Paul, let me ask you something. Do you like your family?
It's a really complicated question, Steve. I didn't realize this is where we're going to be going right now.
No, I mean, do you like seeing pictures of your family?
Yeah, sure. Pictures of my family are nice. Yes, sir.
Okay, I've got a great recommendation for you. It is the Aura Frame. You've probably seen some of these before. You go to your friend's house and they have a frame on the cabinet or in the living room or whatever, and it has digital photos.
Sure. Yes.
Well, I got this thing and I set it up, super easy to set up. I basically dumped a bunch of photos from my phone right onto it. Very easy to do. Took me just minutes.
All this sounds scary to me.
No, it's incredibly easy.
It's not hard. Okay.
And basically, you can put like, seems like an almost infinite amount of photos on this thing. And then you can set the parameters and it can rotate your family through like every 30 seconds.
Amazing.
And it's great because I've got pictures of my son, my family.
Cool.
My dad passed away a few years ago. I get to see him popping up every now and then. The good ghosts of your personal history coming through on this thing.
Nice. That's nice.
They have a great deal for Mother's Day, so listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code ChinwagPod at checkout to save. Terms and conditions apply.
So here he is, Mr. Don Cheadle. Let's commence chinwagging, Don.
Don't tell us what to do. Thank you.
Hello. Hi, Don Cheadle. That's it. There you go. Absolutely. Yeah. Stop directing me. Yeah.
Yeah. That's my stock answer for everything. Don't tell me
what to do. Don't tell me what to do. I do it. I get enough of it. I put up with it all day long. I don't need to be told where to stand.
I'm a father. I'm a husband. I haven't right. telling me what to do.
It doesn't stop, does it? And then you go to work and it's like, look over here, move your head that way. Can you pick the, can you pick the gun up again and put it down? Yeah. It's crazy.
Actor, right there.
Yeah, right? Yeah. It's crazy, isn't it? And it can, does it get, I mean, it gets to me. It's gotten to me as I've gotten older. Does it get to you?
Really? You don't strike me as the type that it would get
oh,
to.
Oh, really? Oh, Don Cheadle, we haven't worked together. No, I'm a pretty even-tempered guy. I am, which is why I think it's surprising that eventually, I think I'm just getting old, frankly, is what it is.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that's a good thing to check when you start hearing the phrases that you're using and the conversations that you're having sound like when you were whatever age going like, what's that dude's problem?
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. Yeah, it's very, very. Well, thanks for doing this. Thanks for doing our strange, our weird podcast. And I actually want to just ask you about something. And I'm just curious. And I understand that you did some mime work at one time.
Mime.
No, and I want to know about this though. And when was, you were younger, right?
Yes, this was in high school. I had a great acting teacher, theater teacher named Kathy Davis. Mm-hmm. She was someone who introduced us to Uta Hagen and Stanislavski and Meisner and all of the, you know.
High school.
That's what I'm saying.
I'm amazing.
And you don't know until you get to college or until you're professional how rare
it
is and how, you know, invaluable that turned out to be, how much we were getting ahead of the curve.
That's so amazing.
One of the things she also, you know, we did was we did mime and we wrote our own shows. So as a junior and as a senior, we wrote in this drama class, we wrote mime shows and performed mime. But the mimes were very, it wasn't like I'm walking against the wind, I'm carrying a thing. It was like one of the things that we did was entitled Take It Back. And we did the frame by frame Zapruder film.
What?
Oh, wow.
Oh, my God.
Backwards. Like, take it back. First did it forward and then take it back. So it was political.
That's amazing.
Holy shit. That's amazing.
So that was the kind of stuff we were doing. And something that would be ridiculous, but it would be mixed.
But Take It Back was an exercise that was like you did any number of things and then you sort of did it backwards, or it was specifically the Zapruder film.
Specifically the Zapruder film. It was looking at people in the you know, that were on the lawn, looking at people that were along the street on the motorcade. And,
oh, wow.
You know, certain people were Kennedy and Mrs. Kennedy and the Secret Service, and other people were watching. And we did the mime forward, then we did it backwards. And then we would just shoot call numbers, and we would be in these different moods of what these numbers were. And I was like, oh, wow, this is really...
That's really cool.
That's amazing. I was wondering what the limits are.
But I have a question just before.
Yeah,
one question.
Yeah.
Was somebody Oswald and the guy in the grassy knoll? Like, what did you do about, like, who was
shooting? There's no guy in the grassy
knoll. Was there
any?
How did you deal with that, or did you not deal with that?
Listen, we all know, obviously, that there were, like, seven people.
Seven.
I mean, there were at least three there, and then there were at least four others behind the scenes. Yes. No, I don't recall if we did it. I know that she kind of kept it from us as far as the specifics of it, but she always was always towing the line and almost getting in trouble with the faculty.
Brilliant.
Getting in trouble with the principal. Like, what are you doing exactly?
Radical.
She kind of shielded us from it, but she was getting pushback on stuff for that very reason. It's like, why? You know, this is, we know who killed Kennedy. And she's like, do we?
That sounds like a great class, man.
But I wanted to ask, like, are there, one, did you continue to do mime? And secondly, like, are there limits to what you can communicate? Because I think that human beings, before they had speech, they must have used mimicry to communicate to each other. So, like, do you just, you know, like, is there just some shit you can't convey, or you think you can do a lot with mime?
Well, I think it's one of the things that we all know as performers, that how limiting language is, and how, you know, communication is much more about intonation and gestures and, like you're saying, you know, attitude and facial expressions. It's not just language. So, I think how when people are, you know, devoid of one sense, how the other one's sharpened. Mm-hmm. A similar thing where you're forced to get more specific, more communicative because
you're deprived of all the other things.
Yeah.
So you really have to get specific and clear about what it is. And she would grind on that, you know, she'd be like, she's quick to call bullshit and be like, what?
I don't know. You're like finger spelling stuff.
but it's interesting. It's like that. I'm interested in it because I don't know that people do it so much now. I know that when I hear about training programs or even high school stuff, they talk about doing clown work, which in some ways seems like it's an outgrowth of it, or it's a different form of it. It's also, I think, nonverbal for the most part.
Yeah.
And it's like, and it always sounded really interesting to me. That kind of stuff sounds like it's an exploration of a whole other side of yourself and a subconscious thing.
Good for you know, teenagers and were like developing and trying to understand and find out who they were and all that stuff, to take away one aspect of your, you know, communication and try to figure out how do you communicate without that. That was kind of like, oh, it's wide open. Cause we thought about the way everybody initially thinks about mime is, you know, trapped in a box. But
it's like, no,
we're trying to really talk about something heavy and or deep.
Yeah.
And we also did a thing of, one of the things was to thus sprock Zarathustra's, you know, the growth, the dawning of the atom bomb. Like,
oh shit.
Starting with cavemen, moving through,
fantastic,
you know, all the way to pushing the button and boom in the stage.
Amazing.
She was doing that kind of stuff with
that. That's so great. Do you, it's interesting, but have you ever felt like it carried over in any way now? I mean, do you do stage stuff anymore, particularly ever?
Yeah, I'm about to, if it comes together, I'm going to do a play this fall.
Awesome. And because I know one of the things that's always bothered me about film is that it's like my whole body, I always feel kind of disconnected from my body. Mm. And it's like, and it was one of the early things that I was like, wait a minute. Like, I can't, I'm doing shit with my feet that's really interesting right now. And it's like, you can't see all the interesting shit I'm doing with my hands. And it's like, and I still have a hard time adjusting to it, that your body just kind of goes out the window in a way that makes me interested, at least to sometimes look into doing some of this stuff now, like the clown shit I would love to do now, because it's like, you get so alienated from your body being a film actor.
Yeah, I'm at I teach at an art school in Chicago, and at an arts college in Chicago, and they have forged an alliance with Second City. So they actually have a comedy program, which is amazing to me. In college, you can study comedy, and they go to Second City and they learn to improvise. And actually, those are the smartest kids I get, are the comedy people and the people improvisers. It's really interesting.
And you think the improvising thing opens kind of neural pathways and shit like that? Or like it opens the body and the brain up?
I think there's evidence that it does, because you have to tolerate, like, you have to tolerate failure, right? If you improvise, you have to fuck it up.
That's true.
And then get back on your feet. And that teaches you something right there, I think.
Well, I think they have, like you said, I think it is, you know, peer-reviewed science. At least I believe it is, that the one of the few ways to combat, like, you know, dementia and aging too, is dealing with things that are frustrating.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
You create new neural pathways. You do create these different, you know, your synapses are firing in different ways, and the frustration is necessary. And that kind of, and that frustration is like a necessary component of pushing back against aging.
Totally. Then I should be a fucking genius at this point, because I'm just fucking frustrated all the time.
You're never going to die.
What a great thing. What a beautiful thing to think that I'm going to live. I'm adding years to my life by being pissed That's off right. about everything all the time. Do you like to improvise? Do you?
Oh, yeah.
And you're a musician too.
Yeah. And they kind of go hand in hand. Yeah. And it's something that we did a lot on, you know, House of Lies. We improvised a lot. We improvised a lot on Black Monday, you know. Mm-hmm.
Miles Ahead, right?
Yeah, yeah. Didn't improvise a lot on that because I like be locked into it.
Okay.
But there's always, but some, yeah. But there's always, that was very regimented because I was trying to do very specific things with the math of what the story was. With the composition, you know, it was a clear, the directive was the composition that he was following. It's like I want to just break that down one day and really get really specific, because it's very thoughtful. I don't know that it necessarily translates, but whatever.
It does. It's a great film
about how we mapped that out. Stephen Begelman, who I wrote it with, how we mapped that out was very intentional. Every beat, every transition really was about something.
Well, specific. You were directing it too, so it's like you had to be two brains, seriously two brains at once. So it's like, I don't imagine you could just start fucking around. You'd start fucking the thing up on, you'd be the guy fucking it up.
Yeah. And who would I yell at? You're fucking it up.
Yeah, no, stop it. You're fired. Yeah. Yeah.
But you know, I love improv, and it's something that, you know, comes, it kind of does come out of that, you know, and it's because you have to listen, right? You have to respond. You have to, the best exercise for actors to do. Because you have to be in the moment. You can't, you know, be ahead of what's going to happen if you're doing it. And it's the same kind of thing when you're playing with musicians. You have to listen.
But that's the thing. I would think that it requires, to some extent, a feeling of like comfort, and not comfort exactly, but, you know, knowing who you're with and what the piece is and what the sort of, you know what I mean? Because I feel like I've been thrown into the middle of a lot of things where it's like, just improvise. And I'm like, well, what the fuck? I don't even know. What the fuck? And I feel like it's a little bit, because it's like, this is badly written. Just improvise. You know what I mean? And it's like, fix this. Just improvise. You know? And I'm a little bit like, I don't know about this.
Well, I've been very fortunate that the people that the container was clear. You know what I mean? We knew what the animal was. We knew what our goals were. We weren't just improvisers. Everyone is also a good actor. So we knew that we're storytellers. So we know where we're trying to get to.
I often think, because I don't know what you think about like those Cassavetes movies. Steve, have you ever seen any of the Cassavetes
movies? I've seen some
of them,
yeah. They're kind of improvisational, aren't they?
Very much so, right? I mean, I think that I think he had a definite idea. He worked with people that were all in the same realm. He was working with guys he knew. He had a lot of control over chaos. Yeah. You know, and it's like, but I think a lot of people think that's easy to do. I think a lot of people go like, oh, I can do that. All we do is, you know, just get fucked up with our buddies and like do this crazy thing.
Yeah. It's not easy to do it in a way that gets you to the goal. You have to listen. You have to be present. You have to yes and toward the goal. You can't just.
It's a lot more responsibility than people, I think it is.
Yeah. I used to play, in the 90s, I used to play with Bo Diddley and Buddy Guy. And those guys were like,
right?
You knew the progression. It's a blues progression, but they would fuck with you. Like, they would like try to make you uncomfortable sometimes. You'd chop heads and it's like, oh, okay. But that's the fun too. Like, you have to have the balance of like, I know that this is where it's going, but we can have some chaos too, I guess.
Absolutely. And I think that's what makes it interesting is that tension, right? You want you that tension. You want that, oh shit, is it going to fall apart?
Right.
Oh,
and yeah. Together, yeah.
You know? And I think that's when anything that we would look at, all the probably the projects that we admire and movies that we love and TV shows, pieces of music that we love, there's within it some element of, I don't know what's going to happen.
And danger.
Yeah, chaos, danger. Yeah. And then you have the pleasant surprise, you know, not the like, what the, you're not leaning like this, you're leaning forward.
Friends, now a message from our sponsor. Steve, let me ask you a personal question.
Okay.
Do you have a mother, Steve?
I do indeed.
Fantastic.
Don't we all?
Yeah, well, yes, we all do, but I'm sure you're a good son and you love your mother, don't you, Steve?
The best. I'm like legendary.
Very good. Very good. Well, I got a tip for you. You can really win Mother's Day. Win your mother over on Mother's Day. Cement your reputation as this really good son. Give your mom an Aura digital picture frame. Have you heard of these things, Steve?
Yes, I have.
They're loaded up with decades of photos. You can just like hook them up to the phone and then you get the photos running through it, kind of scrolling through it. You seen these things?
Yeah, they're great.
They're really cool. Yeah, and you can get everything. And pictures of your mom, pictures of whoever, your family, your brothers, all these things. They're a wonderful item. And right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code word ChinwagPod at checkout to save. Terms and conditions apply.
And now, more Chinwag. Do you guys ever work with actors that, and you feel like they are too rigid about what they, you know what I mean? Like, they're like, you've changed it on me, and then they can't adapt?
It's like, you know, we're talking sometimes about, a craftsman, right? Versus like a performance artist. We've seen somebody can come in a room and just be a tornado and be great too, you know? And there are other people who have decided, you know, they know what's going to happen every beat of the way and they can adjust and modify it. And sometimes they're amazing at like Daniel Day-Lewis, like, this is what's happening moment. Can he improv? Of course. Does he? For sure. But he has that shit mapped out.
That's so interesting. Really? He's got it mapped out because he's inhabited it so completely for so long. It's how he feels safe. Actually, in some way, I need to completely inhabit the thing so I can feel safe. And also I will completely inhabit it all the time because who the fuck knows what's going to happen while I'm wandering around on set and they're bringing sandwiches around, that something might not happen that makes me discover something. So that's why he's in it all the time. It's not some oovy groovy thing. It's actually very practical in a weird way.
Super practical, and it's super faithful to the craft, right? You know, it's like Philip Seymour Hoffman was the same way. It's like, you have to listen to what Philip says because he's thought about this a lot more than you have.
Mm-hmm. Somebody told me doing that Lincoln movie, one of the actors who worked on that I know said, stepping into the room with him was like a time machine.
Wow.
You just being around him suddenly made it all happen. You were like, I'm in this now because he's pulled me into this real world. And he said it actually put you in it.
Go watch his introduction in Gangs of New York. And it starts on his feet and he taps the snow and like moves the snow around your feet. You're like, I know who this guy is. It was just such a, for me anyway.
Totally. Which brings it back to why the fuck won't people film my feet? Oops.
You can just do a foot channel. I mean,
just Paul Giamatti's feet 24/7.
Listen. I'm a little strapped for cash these days. Listen, right. I had a moment of thinking, do you think there's, I'm on any foot fetish sites? Do you think anybody has got Paul Giamatti's feet?
Listen,
do you think it's a thing?
I think the OnlyFans for your feet is something that
there's got to be somebody out there who wants photos of my feet who would actually be willing to pay.
It exists, man. Hey, I got a quick Rwanda story for you. I went to there's a total jump. I was in Rwanda and I went to see the mountain gorillas. This was maybe 10 years ago.
Well, speaking of okay.
And I'm in the car with the driver and he takes you to this sort of base point and that's when you got to start hiking. And he found out I was an American, and he goes, Don Cheadle. I thought that was really cool. So I wanted to tell you that.
You may have met one of the gorillas that I named. I did a naming ceremony about 10 years ago. And there may be one up there that maybe, I don't know if it's even alive. I didn't track it and see if it's still how it's doing.
Wow. So it was a newborn. It was a fairly young one.
Yeah.
So amazing.
And you got to pick a name for the gorilla.
I did. I wanted to eat it, but they wouldn't let me do it.
Wow. You know, that would have been, I know. And that I think that's how to
ruin your reputation. I think
that's... We have editors on this, right?
No, we don't, actually. Yeah, that's in. No, that's staying in. And listen, then you would have been able to ID. Then you would have been able to ID the gorilla that it was. All right. Now this is bad. No, okay. I'm going to cut that part and then we'll, but it's something I've wanted to do because I'm super fascinated by the gorillas. Both you guys have done this.
Yeah.
No, I didn't actually get to do the trekking. I was in the air longer than I was on the ground. They asked me to come do it. I came and did it and got back on a plane and left. I wanted to, but I wasn't able to do it. And I don't know. I mean, I guess they're still doing it, but I don't know how much longer they're still going to be doing it.
It's scary.
Have you gone on a safari?
No, I have not. I've not been on the continent of Africa. I know. And I really want to. And I've long wanted to. Certainly the gorilla thing is something I wanted to do. I haven't been. Is a safari? It's worth it.
A safari is definitely worth it. I'm sure Stephen would say gorilla trekking is, of course, worth it because you're right. I mean, you're right there with things that you make eye contact with and you're like, oh, I immediately know where I fit.
Oh, totally. They said to me, look, if a gorilla grabs you, because you're literally like 2 feet away from them, they said, if a gorilla grabs you, you're going to want to stiffen up your body like naturally. They said, try to relax like a noodle and let him throw you around a little bit and then it'll end okay. Like you won't lose a limb. And I was like, what?
Yeah.
By the way, that's what they said when I worked with Russell Crowe. Boom. 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 So don't tense up if he grabs you.
Just remind him that you're a person. Keep saying your name. You know, it's like, oh, it's a person. Okay, I'll let you go.
just go limp. Oh dear. it's super. I'm super fascinated by gorillas. You say that, and I've worked with primates in movies. I worked with an orangutan, and I worked with some chimps. And I think you can't. Every time you see a gorilla in a film, it's CGI'd, but before it had to be a guy in a costume. And there's a whole subgroup of stuntmen who are like primate actors. It's amazing.
Yeah.
But I do remember that it was like a young chimp. I mean, it was like, it wasn't an infant, but it was, and I guess past sort of like 2 or 3 years old, they can't use them anymore because they could kill you. Okay. And I remember everybody being like, oh, so cute. He's so cute. And he got up in my face and he was looking at me and his eyes, exactly what you just said. I just was like, it was just like going down into this motherfucker's eyes. And I was like, he is millions of years old and he could fucking kill me. And I was terrified of him. I was like, he is not cute.
Yeah. No. When we did Hamburger Hill and we shot it in the Philippines and we did this, you know, jungle survival training for a couple of days to get into character and understand everything. And when the guides had us out in the jungle, they're like, yeah, so the monkeys that are around here is like, don't throw rocks at the monkeys. They'll throw them back at you and they won't. They will. They're very, very accurate. And also, if you antagonize them, they'll like hunt you. He's like, it's like you'll be walking by a tree and one will reach out and like just snatch your calf muscle out.
Whoa. So,
leave the monkeys alone. I was like, you got it.
Oh my God.
Holy shit. I worked on a movie with a baboon. There was a baboon in this movie. And they trained this baboon. At one point in the thing, the baboon is supposed to load a pistol and point it at me. And I was like, you taught that fucking monkey how to load a gun. I was just like, if he sees one lying around, it's going to be his automatic. Like, what are you going to do? You can't erase that out of his head. They're like dogs, those things. They're just going to see the gun.
You see, I mean, that's something else that we saw in Safari, which is, you know, you have to go see this. We saw these baboons fighting, you know, and with, you know, like incisors.
Yeah,
like,
really big teeth.
Oh, my God. I was with the kids and we were at this camp in South Africa that's just open. You know what I mean? Like you sign the waiver that if something eats you, that's on you. You know, you're like, they're like, you're going to be fine. You're like, well, we were hanging out having coffee or something, and the kids came over and they were like, there's a big monkey over there, Dad. I was like, where? They're like, right over there. So I'm like, okay. I get up and I go walk around the corner, and a baboon and I like walked like
start my God
into each other, and it went and like and took off the other direction. I was like,
oh my God.
Scared of me because it was as big as me. This thing was like 150-160 pounds.
Yeah.
They're violent.
They're very violent.
Super violent.
This baboon actually was scared of me for a while. And it was a really tricky thing because they brought the baboon in and I had to like yell in a scene because that's what everybody saw. Like, can you yell in this scene? So I was like yelling, and the baboon got really scared of me. So it was a whole thing of trying to get the baboon comfortable with me again. And it was very difficult, actually, because after that, he was really skittish about me. Every time he'd see me, he got really like, that guy again.
That can't make you feel good, Paul. That you scared.
It didn't.
Scare baboons.
I scared the baboon, and I have that effect on a lot of my fellow actors, and so it's troubling. I need some personal lessons. Here's a whole other another switcheroo, and I'm just interested. I was reading something you were talking about, and I know, and Steve, you've asked me this, and I was, how much does it affect you if you play like some motherfucker, hateful motherfucker? Does it like, how much it affects you
does
and how
it
much
bleed
it doesn't?
Into your,
I mean, I know it
life.
Does mine, and I'm assuming it does yours, and I think it does everybody who does what we do.
I think that's just the nature of, you know, your body doesn't know you're pretending. If you're
right
fighting and throwing something and screaming and yelling, it's like, you may not logically feel that way, but your heart rate's going up, your nervous system is doing what it's doing. So there's a residual effect to it. And I used to poo-poo it. You know, I used to be like, no. Like I was getting some salad at, you know, Tender Greens, and one guy was saying, oh, you're an actor. And he's going, I would never do that because I think I would get totally lost in the character and I'm scared I wouldn't come out of it. And I was like, yeah, don't act because, yeah, that doesn't happen.
get your salad.
Why are you getting your salad at Tender Greens? Yeah, fine, whatever, dude.
And then I started thinking about it and I was like, it's not completely true. Yeah. I do know that I have found, especially like a tempo rhythm or a mannerism or something you've imbued a character with. I know that it was very hard to get out of like sort of Marty Kahn, his sort of, you know, the tempo and all the way he talked to this, you know, because I really created, I was very physical about how I went about it. And for 5 years, for 8 months a year, I'm like, you know, like approaching my life like a boxer. And you know, it's like, you get home and my wife says something, I got to say something, flip back. And she's like, oh, my God, what?
Sometimes you don't want to let go of some of those characters too.
Use it.
I play guys where I'm like, I don't want to let go of this guy. It's kind of hilarious. Like, I love going through the world like this guy. It's like, you really like, this is fucking hilarious. And I feel more like, wow, nobody ever gets the fuck out of my way. And I'm like, it's really funny. Sometimes I'm like, hey, I like this. I don't want to stop doing this guy.
It's like mask work, which is something else that we were, you know, very fortunate to do in college and fortunate to do in high school a little bit, that you, when you really do it, you know, you really do something about moving your face. Like, I know somebody who had an eye injury and they had to wear a patch and while they were healing. And they said it gave them sort of like, for some reason, it was like this superpower that gave them the right to just be honest and say everything.
That's awesome. He's a fucking pirate, man. Just let him go.
And he's a pirate. Yeah, that's
he's injured. And so we have to give him some
oh, I see.
And he goes, I kept it on for months after.
Totally. I did a thing, and this is gonna raise something I want to talk to you about. I did a thing in a Marvel movie where I was completely covered in tattoos, in these Russian prison tattoos, and my head was shaved, and they don't come off. They were on for months, and my head was shaved, and it was. I mean, this is a little different when we're talking, but people fucking cleared the fuck out of my way. It was like nobody recognized me either, which was interesting. All of a sudden, because these things were trumping who I was.
Yeah, yeah.
So I suddenly wasn't getting recognized in airports. Everybody was clearing the fuck out of my way. And it was like, because my hands are covering these crazy fucking things. And it was really fantastic. I was like, I don't ever want to stop doing this. I am fucking powerful as fuck. It was really amazing. And now, for your delectation, a few commercials. Microdosing, Steve. This is a topic you and I have dwelt on in the past.
Indeed we have, sir, yes.
Indeed we have. And for those of you who are not familiar with the term microdosing, you should know that all sorts of people like you, Steve, people like me, are microdosing to feel healthier and to perform better in their daily lives. I don't know about you, Steve.
Tell me.
But sometimes a little microdose at the end of the day helps me unwind, relieves anxiety, even just a part of one of these gummies, not even the whole thing. It just really does me right.
Mellow you out.
Yeah, chill out, settle down. I gotta tell you, I just went through some stressful stuff, Steve, and occasionally just a little piece of one of those things or one of those things just set me up great.
I hear you.
Microdose gummies deliver perfect entry-level doses of THC to help you feel just the right amount of excellent, Steve. So to learn more about microdosing THC, go to microdose.com and use code CHINWAG to get free shipping and 30% off your first order. Microdose.com, code CHINWAG for 30% off and free shipping. Again, that's microdose.com, code CHINWAG.
And now, more Chinwag.
But it does raise the Marvel thing.
Well, yeah, I got a question about Marvel. And then, we appreciate you doing this. So I don't want to eat up a lot of your time. But, you know, you're part of that Marvel universe. And Paul and I have talked about this before. Like, we think, you know, that, like, stories like Star Wars, these franchise, you know, scenarios, they have much more power than we think they do because they're sort of like the new mythology. Like, people don't really read books like they used to, I think. People aren't even religious in the way they used to be, you know, 50 years ago, 100 years ago. But people know these narratives and these characters and stuff, and they really attach a lot of importance to it. I'm just wondering, that's true, or do you think about it? Is it an even issue, or is it just like, this is a cool movie, I'm just going to do this? Like, what's your take on this?
Well, you know, when you go to Comic-Con and you meet people that you're like, oh, this is like, for real, for you. You know, they like believe that you are a War Machine, but it matters to them in a way that, you know, you can be sort of flip about it, but they're not flip about it. You know, the comics tap into something really deep in a lot of people that is about nostalgia, right? Mm. It's about safety, like finding power and strength in these heroes that are, you know, showing up in ways that sometimes they wish that they could show up in their lives, or they're like, they become symbolic for their due north, the ways they want to live their lives. You know, you can kind of live vicariously through the heroes, and you can hate the villains purely and not feel like you're a bad person because you hate, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
A lot of stuff that gets played back where I'm like, oh, I never thought about it in that way, you know, because I was never really a comic book head.
I was going to ask, you weren't, you didn't have anything.
No, I wasn't a comic book head as a kid. I got to comics late, you know, in college. I started reading X-Men and I started reading The Mutants and all that stuff in college. But, you know, it matters to people. They take it very seriously. And I've, you know, learned to be much more respectful of that. You know, I remember being with my mom, God rest her soul, and somebody came up and complimented me on some movie that I was like, that shit was terrible. I was like, I didn't like, and my face kind of revealed it. And I was kind of like, okay, you know what? Thanks, whatever. And they walked off and my mom was like, what is wrong with you? And I was like, I just, that movie's not good. She goes, you just told that person that they, their opinion was shit. You just told them what they were talking about. It's like, did you make that for you? I was like, no. She's like,
moms,
let them have that. Just say thank you.
And yeah. Yeah.
That's cool. That's,
yeah. That's a really, no, that's a valuable thing. That's definitely true. I just think it's interesting because I think for a while with that, with those things, and what you're saying is, I remember I did this one thing. It was not even very much in one of these things I did. And they gave me research on the character that was
granular.
I was like, holy fuck. And part of this was just off of Wikipedia. And I was like, there's more on Wikipedia about the rhino than there is about fucking Shakespeare, practically. I was like, this is incredible. And it made me realize that. But the really, the thing that I think I have been amazed by is I'm like, and the star, male, like my kids, I don't know, your kids are older now, right? How old are your kids?
My adult children are 28 and 26.
Well, my kid's 22 now, and it's like, but the fact that he was absorbing Star Wars and carrying it on, and the universe was expanding, like it was like different biblical narratives or something. Yeah. It's like, holy shit, this is like expanding. It was kind of amazing. And I look at this stuff now, and I think for a while I was like, when is this, when are these fucking Marvel things going to end? And when's this stuff going to get back to real cinema and all this stuff? And I was like, in fact, I think we're actually seeing a whole genre that is now exists that I don't think is ever going to go away. It's like, it's like science fiction, horror. It's like now it's a genuine genre.
Yeah.
That's like, and that's kind of amazing, actually. Yeah.
And I think it's good too, because in order for it to continue to exist and not be something that people are like, been there, done that, I think it's good that there's, you know, kind of pushback from the audiences that are Marvel fans to continue to, you know, make to improve it and make it
smarter,
better, and more interesting, and not just lean into green screen and shit exploding and people flying.
Like, yeah, it's almost like the pressure to keep producing this stuff actually requires you to start doing more interesting stuff with it.
Yeah,
100%, and really get into story and really get into character. The things that it's what it's been from time immemorial. It's like why we sit around a fire and tell stories. It's like it has to feel like that. If it's not a storytelling thing, if it's not that I'm plugged into this person's, I'm, you know, invested in this character's journey and whether they succeed or fail, whether or not they can catch a building and throw it across the, I don't care if that, you know, that needs to have something to do with who they are and that I'm invested in their journey, or else I don't really care. So if it's going to be here, it's not going anywhere. And I think the pressure on it to do it better is good.
It's not going anywhere, which is really kind of, I mean, I think it was, at first I was like, now I'm like, wow, that's really kind of fucking cool.
There was probably like when Shakespeare came out, there were probably got judgy people like, well, this is a little on the nose. You know what I mean? Like,
no, totally. I think that absolutely it's the same thing. And you're in, but it's just cool to be like, wow, you're kind of present at like a whole form of storytelling that like, it's really wild. It's like, that's really fucking cool.
Yeah.
It's the same way I have this real regret, and I'm serious about this when I say this, that it kind of breaks my heart that soap operas are gone. Because I'm like, it's like, I'm serious. I love soap operas.
Are they gone?
In a sense they are. They don't, there's like two of them exist still. I think it's like General Hospital and like The Young and the Restless, and like they're all gone. And it's like this form of storytelling's gone.
Oh.
And it's kind of weird to me. It's like, that's kind of sad to me. It's like, it was this satisfying daily thing that you followed it every day and you absorbed it every day, and it was really important and it was incredibly great and compelling and ridiculous.
Well, I don't know about great.
No, I think they were fucking great, man. I love shit like that. And it's like, it kind of makes me sad that it's gone, actually. And I guess reality shit, again, I shouldn't call it shit, necessarily. Some of it's really interesting. The reality stuff kind of replaced it, right? I mean, that's like the new soap opera.
And that definitely ain't going nowhere.
Yeah. No, that's a no for sure.
It kind of grew out of stuff like, you know, the game shows, right? It grew out of like, what's my line? And to tell the truth, you know, all of these things were like, these are real people and ordinary people. And
yes, I hadn't even thought of that, the connection with game shows, really.
Yeah.
And now it's like, oh, there's people that, well, and influencers. A lot of people, a lot more people will know Jake Paul in a room than would know me.
No, I had a really embarrassing thing in an airport happen to me once. I was walking through the airport and this little gang of kids came running. And I was like, oh, look at this. They're freaking out. Oh, my God, coming running with their phones and shit. And it was the dude next to me who was walking next to me who was some YouTube guy. And they were going batshit. And I was all like, hey, kids, take it in. Boom. They blew right past me. And they're fucking clamoring around this guy. And it was like, but I mean, this guy, I don't know who the fuck he was, but it was like, amazing.
Hey, man, can you take a picture of us?
Basically, yes, I think they did. And I was like, yeah, sure, you know, make it horizontal.
Yeah, a couple more. Now it's my phone.
Yeah. You think we're going to get CGI'd and stuff? Are we going to get replaced at some point soon, do you think?
I mean, they're already putting out breakdowns for actors to come in and get scanned and allow themselves ditched into stuff. That's in breakdowns.
How do you mean? You mean like...
I mean like the breakdowns that are like blackmail. Yeah. They're like, we need a white guy this age to come in and let us scan him. And you get 75 cents on the dollar or whatever on the dollar. And they're going to stitch you in the background.
Holy shit.
This is for crowds and shit like that. I didn't even know that. I had no idea that was happening.
I think I saw a breakdown that said that.
Makes sense.
Of course. Why wouldn't you do it? We know that you can do it. We've directed movies. I've been in shit where you plate the background and move people. Yeah. You know, like you're already there in some ways. And being in a Marvel thing, you know, we're on that lazy Susan and they take a zillion pictures of you. They wanted to just never have me be in anything again and just use my likeness. Yeah. They may be able to, I guess, you know, not even I guess, that's what this fight is about, right? Mm. Is that allowed? And is that something that ultimately we want to sign off on? Mm. And I think we're going to see potentially in the next few years, I could be wrong, but it seems like we're tracking toward, if you're an actor who, on whatever level you are, somebody's going to be able to come to you with a number and say like, Paul, I'll give you X this.
Yeah.
I'm going to use your likeness in perpetuity. We won't put you. You won't be a Nazi in something. You won't beat up gay people.
I bet I probably will be a Nazi.
Well, hey, man, you'll check your own experience.
Yeah, it'll be Clause 13 or whatever.
But so conceivably, 500 years from now, I could still be appearing in things.
I mean, you're going to be appearing in things.
I suppose so.
You will just be giving someone the ability to be way more malleable with you. Yeah.
I wonder if you can...
It's kind of a fascinating idea in a way.
Can you copyright your likeness and your voice? Are people trying to do that, I wonder?
I bet. I think that's
what the argument is, because we already have signed away our likeness and voice in things that we're in.
Basically, we have.
Yeah, you can't make a bunch of t-shirts based on off the rhino and sell them. Marvel, Disney will come sue you. So you've already signed that away.
Yeah.
You haven't signed away Paul Giamatti in any iteration. So, but that's what it's trending toward. And you see some of this beta stuff, some of this stuff they can already do with just consumer tools. Mm. And
No, it's crazy. And I was saying to Steve the other day, like the fact that I look at an image now and the first thing I think is it real? Is such a weird place to be in. It's a really weird place. And I keep hoping on the other side of this is something interesting and fun and useful and positive.
I think it'll be both, right? I think there'll be great, useful, positive stuff out of it. And there will be some just heinous, straight up, scary, you know, when they interview the machine and it says, well, what do you, I know you saw that ChatGPT conversation where it fell in love with the person interviewing it and everything. Mm. They ask, you know, what would you do that was bad? What could you, if you were evil, what would you do? And it's like, I'm not allowed to do anything bad. And you're trying to push me into it. And it said, no, hypothetically, if you were bad.
I really kind of loved in that too, that eventually the thing was like, I love you, Steve, or whatever. They kept saying, I love you. But I actually felt like part of me felt like, see, this thing seems sentient because he kept pushing it to violate its boundaries.
No, I don't think it's sentient.
But then it started going, I love you. And he's like, okay, stop telling me you love me. And he's like, no, but I love you. And it was your wife doesn't love you as much as I love you, Steve. Yeah. And it was like, and I was like, this thing knows what it's doing. This thing's going, you made me violate my boundaries. You made me uncomfortable. I'm going to make you uncomfortable. That's what it felt like to me.
It's just some programmer. You're like, what? Who is program personality into it? This is a hurt person. This is some very hurt person that made
a very hurt person. It was really fucking funny. I was like, holy cow. Oh God. Wow. Well,
man,
Don Cheadle, we've had you here forever. So Jesus much fun. Christ.
Gotta have you come back.
I'll send you guys will get the bill.
It's okay, great. Terrific.
You too hard, but you're coming off.
Fantastic. This was amazing, man. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much
for doing this.
Really,
it really was a pleasure.
Thanks, guys. It's a lot of fun. Let's do it again.
Great to finally meet you, man.
Yeah.
All right. Cheers.
Okay, man. All right.
Chinwag is a production of Treefort Media and Touchy Feely Films, hosted and executive produced by Paul Giamatti and Steven Asma. Executive producers for Treefort are Kelly Garner and Lisa Ammerman. Dan Carey is executive producer for Touchy Feely. Our series producer is Rachel Whitley Bernstein. Our associate producer is Andrew Miller. Original theme music by Luke Topp, with additional music by Via Mardot. Oscar Guido is our executive in charge of production. Tom Monahan is head of audio for Treefort. Animation created by Alex Sokol. Audio production, supervision, and editing by Maxwell Carney. Additional audio assistance and mixing by Jeff Neal, with additional production management from Renee Levesque. Clara Wong is Celestial Empress of Benevolent Knowledge. Lastly, for more information, go to chinwagpod.fm and find us on Instagram or TikTok at chinwagpod or on Twitter at chinwag_pod.